Hi everyone, and welcome to the Brexit podcast. I'm back from holidays, so poor Tim doesn't have to do everything by himself anymore. What a relief. Today's episode is slightly uncharted territory for the podcast, as we're looking into the realm of big data. For this, we brought on the German human rights journalist Isabel Garin to explain how the news and the opinions of millions of people can be manipulated by technology. Now, we've just seen this in America with the whole Russian hacking scandal, so this does indeed seem quite urgent. So do keep on listening to find out how this is relevant to people here in the UK. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on all social networks. We're at Brexit Podcast pretty much everywhere. And if you really like the show, you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, and we'd massively appreciate if you could share the love and give us a quick rate and review.
Righty-ho, for today's show, we have the lovely Isabel Garin on, who is a freelance journalist from Berlin who works at the intersection of human rights, social entrepreneurship, and internet and communication technologies. Welcome to the show, Isabel.
Hello, Tim. Very lovely to be here.
Yes, lovely to have you on. Now, big data, social bots, these, I believe some articles I've read, can be quite influential in voting patterns of in terms of Trump being voted in as the US president, in terms of the decision behind Brexit. So, you know, isn't it just a case that people read the news and make their decision? What does is technology having such a big role?
Yes, that's an interesting question. Well, technology applies to, if we think about technology, the internet, then technology plays a big role because the internet has made it easier than ever to spread information and knowledge. This is true. But at the same time, it has made it just as easy to undermine the truth. We are now in the era of the so-called post-facts. The media is splintered these days, leading to communications on the internet that call another person's fact their fiction. So it's not just longer that people just read the news. Also, which news are we actually talking about? It seems that the real danger nowadays lies in the media illiteracy. In times where a growing number of people receive their news only or predominantly through social media, people create their own echo chambers. Well, and this, sure, as we have seen, allows fake news to spread quickly through social networks. And yeah, as we've seen, the US election proved the last example of that. And this is why Mark Zuckerberg is now under attack, because Facebook's algorithm actually has helped creating these echo chambers, leading to similar stories on people's news feeds and thus creating an unisono voice without pluralistic debate or other opinions.
Okay. So, but if these sort of, you call them echo chambers there, and if all they do is kind of underscore what we already believe, does that actually change the voting patterns?
It's interesting. It does not entirely change the voting patterns. What would change the voting patterns, or rather, it's actually interesting how they fuel you with the sentiment. Let's say, for example, the Wall Street Journal created an graphic that illustrated the respective filter bubbles of different political views in the US election. So if you're leaning towards one party, then your news feed on Facebook will only contain a similar post. And in this respect, it's probably not only changing so much the voting patterns, but it just reaffirms you and assures you that your opinion might be the only one out there or the correct one. Maybe we talk a little bit later about how to actually influence voting patterns, because that's actually what some companies have been doing. But just a quick note, in Germany, we have the ugly shadow of the AfD, the party called Alternative für Deutschland. They are losing over this year's election. And a German journalist called André Reisin here underwent an experiment himself. So he dived into a new filter bubble. He created a false Facebook profile. He liked some of the populist and pertinent pages. And yeah, voila, in a blink, his timeline was filled with hopes and paranoia thanks to Facebook's similar story algorithm, and he himself was surprised by how much this actually changed his mindset as well. So,
Wow. I mean, it's really strong, really influential stuff. And so if somebody talks big data, is this what they're really talking about?
Sort of. There are two things. Big data, basically, it's a bit of a, how shall I call it? It's a bit of an industry buzzword, basically, and depending a bit where you stand and who you ask, it can either represent a threat to personal privacy or a revolution in data processing and conferencing. It's actually both. But I think when we talk about data, we mean, you know, that extremely large data sets may be collected and analyzed computationally and predominantly to reveal patterns, trends, and associations, and especially relating to human behavior and interaction.
Okay.
Now, when this has become, when it becomes tricky, basically.
I see. And then social bots is another term that we hear bandied around. What are they?
Social bots, or they are also called sock puppets, are robots in disguise, so to speak. So,
okay.
A social bot is a type of bot, a software application, that controls a social media account. So like all bots, a social bot is an automated software. And these software applications run automated tasks over the internet and at a much higher rate than it would be possible for any human alone. So this is especially interesting when it comes to, for example, Twitter. Bots retweet and disseminate content in an instant. Simple sock puppets tweet up to 100,000 times in a second when working alone, so no human could actually retweet that much.
Yeah.
And if they work in compound, they are able to analyze tweets on a semantic level and then even design an answer with some keywords they have been previously fed with before. So it's, they then distribute the newly generated message as quickly as possible. And now you can imagine how this might result in the creation of a vortex of false information or manipulated opinions.
Yeah.
And sadly, both parties in the US election, for example, used, sadly, if you want to say that it's a bad thing, but yes, sadly, they used, social bots to increase their followers. But clearly, Trump's team was ahead of the game.
It's
a funny fact about social bots, because initially they were originally developed for hybrid American Ministry of Defense. I think it's a kind of disturbing fact rather than funny, maybe.
Okay, you said so. You just cut out slightly there. You said they were developed by the U.S. military for defense. In what manner?
For hybrid war. By the American Ministry of Defense. So the software applications were originally invented by the American Ministry of Defense to, what does the American Ministry of Defense do? I might only speculate, but software applications that run an automatic task and that quickly retweet or disseminate information. That's, in my opinion, the intention of, to create some certain information that should maybe go to manipulate opinions, for example.
I see. So it's a sort of pro-war propaganda, potentially.
One could say so.
Okay. Now, I read a piece which you actually shared, which was "This Company Knows What You Think," which really piqued my interest into this subject. And this is why we wanted to get you on the Brexit podcast, because the company is called Cambridge Analytica, and they had a hand, I believe, in both the Donald Trump election success, but also the Leave vote coming out on top in the EU referendum. So can you tell us a little bit about Cambridge Analytica and what they actually do?
Yes. So as I mentioned before, big data does have real-world implications, and especially, you know, when privacy advocates are concerned about the massive volumes of information that is assembled there, it is not very difficult for any company or any government to build a complete picture of a person, of their activities, their purchasing, their readings, their browsing habits, and so on. So, and this is exactly where this company that you just mentioned, Cambridge Analytica, comes into play. Because Cambridge Analytica does exactly that. It creates a whole or complete, well, more or less complete picture of a person due to their, for example, likes on Facebook, their activity, their purchasing, et cetera, and so on.
Mm.
Okay, big data leads to what experts call the term big nudging. So the big nudging is actually, I hope it's not too too abstract, but big nudging is adapted from the concept of the nudge theory in behavioral science. And that means that positive reinforcement and indirect suggestions can influence the motives and decision-making of a group or individual. So if you apply that to maybe, let's say, political terms, then it means that on a basis of a big data set, individuals and groups can be nudged into certain directions. So this is a privately held company. They've also a sort of novelesque founding story with copying research from universities and, you know, having offshore companies and so on. But they combine, or at least their Wikipedia entry says, they combine data mining and data analysis with strategic communication for the electoral process. So in other words, they use the big data assembled by people, like for stuff on Facebook, and combine it with other data that is easy to access, for example, like bonus cards or club memberships, entries in the land register. And I'm not very certain about the situation in the UK, but for example, in the US, you can almost obtain any data. There are several companies where you can just purchase any data you want.
Okay.
So, as you said before, the Trump team contracted the Cambridge Analytica for their electoral campaign. And an example, for example, what they did for them, they did the voter targeting. And this is what we initially talked about a little bit. So they bought so-called dark posts on Facebook. And these are Facebook ads that are only visible on the timeline of certain users that match the criteria. So there was this case when African-American men, where you would have thought they would go for Clinton, could suddenly see the video where Hillary Clinton calls black men super predators. But that was a term that was totally taken out of context when Clinton actually used the term to describe teenage gangs as such, but doesn't link to African-American men and super predators at all. So this is just one example of the opinion and the targeting of voters. And yeah, you just said it. No minor than Nigel Farage also wanted to contract Cambridge Analytica for his Leave the EU campaign to target the undecided. Boom. but on the other hand, I have to say this. There's a lot of hype about it around the company too, because assertions made regarding the successful outcome of the Leave campaign and the play of Cambridge Analytica themselves, they have never been confirmed or verified from any other side other than the company itself. And it is very difficult to get material, basically assembled, that would confirm the link between Cambridge Analytica and the Leave campaign. And in fact, with regard to the US election, even Cambridge Analytica did not predict the correct outcome of the U.S. election, because a company spokesman called the reporters before the election day to say that Trump had only a 20% chance of winning. So that's actually quite comforting that they didn't even know it. But I guess it would be tempting, but in a way too easy explanation, to attribute both the Brexit of some success entirely to them. Yet it is a worrying picture that the stuff we read online is tailored and that we are influenced by someone or something that appears to know an awful lot about us. But when we talk about the Brexit, actually what I read a very interesting story, which is linked to social bots. And of course, I think it is, not to my knowledge at least, not the work of Cambridge Analytica, or yet, you know, it is not very easy to reveal the identity of social bots. So you can't actually manipulate the results of an election, but you can certainly manipulate the opinion. And the study that I was going to talk about was made by Philip and Howard and Ben Colani from the University of Cornell. And they had investigated computational propaganda and the role of political bots during the UK EU referendum.
Mm.
They analyzed tweeting patterns for both human users and bots, and their most important findings were that political bots, or as we said, social bots, have had a small but strategic role in the referendum.
Yes.
Especially the conversations. And then secondly, the family of hashtags associated with the argument for leaving the EU dominated. And then the third factor, which in my view is the most stunning one, is that less than 1% of sampled accounts generated almost a third of all the messages. So again, 30% of all tweets emitted during the Brexit referendum were sent from only 1% of users with a very high frequency. So, wow, this, to my mind, is kind of like, yeah, mind-blowing. It's not only indicating to bots, but it's also indicating to possible manipulation. And I think, therefore, we can say that it's most likely that social bots also have creating Brexit.
Yeah, understood. So I think, as we, you sort of said, you don't feel that the results can necessarily be manipulated in the first instance. But I suppose if you have an individual who becomes increasingly hardened in their own political stance through reading all this information, like you said, you can almost go to the point of paranoia, then their ability to influence those around them, let's say somebody was adamant they wanted to leave, that could really have a rub off on some of the, you know, their friends and family, I guess.
Oh yes, in that sense I do totally agree. And as I said, like, I think the opinion can be manipulated entirely and totally through these I struggle to call them progresses, but
yeah,
I can't find another word now. But yeah, development, let's say development.
Do you feel, and I guess this leads us on slightly to our next question as to where you think this is going to go moving forward, but do you feel there should be more regulation in this area? Or is it the fact that the guys, that the parties or the governments that should be regulating it are actually using the likes of social bots for their own ends?
Yeah, this is a tough question. I think, for example, the German government has decided, or basically they're very wary about political parties using social bots, but especially after the US election, all the parties, apparently AfD, have rejected or to use social bots within their
within their campaigning.
But
then there's an element of trust within that they actually do it, and then there's not some dark arts taking place where people behind the scenes are actually manipulating this.
Yes, yes, exactly. And this is, not only the German government is worried about the social bots, but also the atmosphere within the EU is charged with populist sentiments. And, we've had some investigations about where the funds of the AfD are coming from, or where some funds of the AfD are coming from, and some signs point to Russian individuals donating a great sum, and it might rather depend on whether our government develops a strategy to counteract the propaganda from, you know, these populist movements, or to cut through the noise of social media, and then again for our media institutions to combat fake news. But I think the European Union as a whole have to come up with some strategy how to combat this on a international level, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I think a lot of people will have heard the news about how, let's say, Russian high-tech groups helped Trump to win the US election, and probably would have dismissed that as kind of just bitterness coming from the Democrat side. But actually, the more I speak to you and listen to you, the more I could understand perhaps how not just Russians, but any other nation or any big group or company, if they wanted to infiltrate and change the direction of a particular voting election, could see this as a really perhaps even super cost effective and incredibly effective way of doing it.
It's really scary, isn't it? On the other hand, I'm not a foreign policy expert, but I think governments worldwide have always tried to manipulate and interfere with other elections for their own purposes. Russian hackers have repeatedly interfered with the US election, with this election, and obviously also on other foreign elections. For example, if you look to what's the Ukraine, but the US, for example, they have done so too. And with something like The Guardian wrote, I can't remember the author of The Guardian now, unfortunately, but it was in The Guardian that they wrote, there's a kind of like an army of trolls and digital foot soldiers that helped governments worldwide to manipulate social media for their own ends. And this probably, you know, I'm not sure, but I'm sure people now are aware of the troll factories and or the famous Trolls of Olvino, as the internet slang name is. It's a troll factory based in St. Petersburg, which has been created by Russian governmental money. And what they do is to create fake accounts on major discussion boards and twist facts and distort images and fake videos and infiltrate the opinion pages and social media with hateful compliments. And this was initially just for, you know, when the war between Russia and Ukraine broke out. But you can sort of begin to imagine that this could also be a scenario, basically, where this happens on a greater scale. And therefore, yes, they probably have influenced the US election and interfered with it in that sense.
Wow. So I think this could be a good opportunity at this point to bring in some of the work that you actually do. Now, I know you've got one website that you run, which is weye.info, where it's a human rights platform that videos can be uploaded and verified, where you verify the actual origins of those videos. And they show some human rights violations that take place. So I guess you're just trying to make sure that is all fair and there is no propaganda within that. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, please, Isabel?
Yes, we're still basically in the creation of the site. But as you just pointed out, it is in terms of verification of user-generated footage, especially video, because it is very hard and very difficult to verify videos. Predominantly, verifying videos has always been done with basically a big network of people, or you have to have your network of people, basically editors or volunteers, a network who is working around that. And we are actually looking and investigating into technical methods of verification, how you can verify videos with a technical it's probably not an algorithm, that would be too much to say, but with the help of technical programs. I think it is a bit too soon to speak. We are developing a very interesting method to how we can do that, and it has to do with the electronic network frequency audio analysis. But explaining this now is probably going a bit too far.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit technical. It's good to know that you're doing something like, because increasingly video and is becoming a way of one of the most powerful ways through digital media of getting messages across,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. I mean, especially because you always think that when it has been filmed, then it can't be manipulated. But in fact, it can be manipulated. And there are an awful lot of videos out there that have been manipulated. And they're very great people out there as well who do amazing work, from Bellingcat to also Amnesty International and other organizations who try to debunk these fake videos or fake photos and everything. But as I said, they use a high or a big corpse, let's say, of people involved in that, and you know, the human can still not be 100% accurate. I mean, there is no 100% verification, but if we develop this technical verification, then we're hoping we're going to be a big step further with that.
Mm. So in the meantime, what can individuals do to make sure that they're not being blinded by false information over the internet? Is there any way that they can verify that what they're looking at is real?
It's a tough question. I think generally, you know, this is a kind of brave new world we live in, and it seems that politicians, but also decision makers and journalists, are not really fully prepared for all this. And traditional media, who we always turn to in these times of, are we reading the real truth, or are we gathering the real information? Traditional media is facing trust, and that subsequently leads to adopting other ways of acquiring information, or indeed even false information. The journalist Stefan Rasmussen from the European Journalism Observatory painted a dark picture when he wrote that since, you know, elitist newsrooms, as they are often regarded, are said to have been ignoring whatever they deem politically incorrect, and that the journalists are no longer the gatekeepers of the public discourse. And he also said that all attempts by fact-checking websites and clarifications by, let's say, the serious media to counter the disinformation flood are unhelpful because they are unable to reach out of their own social media filter bubbles as they are preaching to the converted. So I would have still said, in my opinion, we have to apply common sense to the things we read and questioning them and trying to verify them and fact check them, even if this takes a little longer, a little more work. And especially with journalists have an important role to do so. We also have to move out of our echo chambers and engage into a public discourse to prevent a populist movements gain, you know, even more momentum and undermine democratic societies and humanistic values. But I think it's also very important, or more important than ever, actually, for schools to teach media and to invest in a broad philanthropic education. I know this sounds like really big and abstract, but this would be, yeah, the ideal scenario and the long-term solution.
Yeah, that does make sense. And it struck me then when you were talking about how we need to take a little bit more time to investigate what we're reading is actually true, is that it feels in many ways that actually we're going kind of the other way in terms of our attention spans. And, you know, look at something like Twitter, and it's everything is so very quickly disposable. We pick up the information, we digest it, and then we move on. I wonder whether we give less and less thought to its actual real worth.
Yeah, I cannot really disagree with you there in this respect, and especially with, you know, the fragmentation of the media, and social media has shown us that this is exactly what's happening. Everybody, you know, is just scanning headlines and basically clickbaiting, following the clickbaiting headlines, and therefore they've developed their truth. And I don't know if media makers and decision makers probably would engage over an ethical code and try to combat fake news and post fact, that would already be something. But I don't want to engage in fear mongering, but I sometimes think that maybe even the polarization of opinions and the fragmentation of the media would increase even more, because, or maybe it has to start in school, you know, when we teach the kids to differentiate and read between the lines, to create an own opinion. And, you know, especially in times when so much reading and gathering news, or in quotation marks news, is done through the net. Separating wheat from chaff.
And comes back to education all the time.
Yes.
It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you, and it's been a real eye-opener for me in terms of learning a lot more about how kind of big data, social bots are actually worryingly shaping our future. Is there anything more that you'd like to add into the discussion? And do you see this becoming even more of a force as we move forward as well?
When we talked about the Cambridge Analytica, and also when I first heard about them, it created a big momentum and a big wave. And since then, it has been downplayed a bit, the role that Cambridge Analytica was actually in both the, not only the the US elections, but also the EU referendum. And at the same time, I find it's kind of like a worrying and dystopian picture that that a company could target basically people to try to influence their opinion. I don't know, but I at the same time, I think that, there's a phrase in German that it's basically that the traditional meaning is, or the literal sense is something just like we don't eat things will not be eaten as hot as they've been cooked or something. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Not the real. Basically, it's kind of like maybe too soon to draw a real dystopian picture and with regard to all this. But and especially the EU legislation is far stricter than US, data security policies and everything. We have a big data security and privacy movement in Germany, or even on the European level. And I think our regulation in terms of that are a bit stricter. So I'm I will hope that it is not fully possible in that way to do it like it has been happening in the US, but you can never be 100% sure.
Yes. So I think what you're saying is I hope it's not actually as big and as scary as perhaps we've talked about here, but actually we shouldn't just dismiss it as conspiracy theories, and there is some, definitely some truth going on in this.
Yes, absolutely.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.